Welcome to Energy Efficiency Markets Podcast, where we provide news and analysis about energy markets and trends.
This is Lisa Cohn from RealEnergyWriters.com. Susan Meredith, author of Beyond Lightbulb, Lighting the Way to Smarter Energy Management, is our special guest today. Energy storage is our topic.
Be sure to pick up our free Energy Efficiency Markets newsletter at RealEnergyWriters.com.
Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Can you tell us more about the basis of your book? I think you were just mentioning to me that it's based on an MBA project.
That's what kickstarted the book, yes. I didn't realize I was writing a book until much later, but I went back to school to get an MBA, and in the MBA program, they usually have a 1 week focused on a capstone project where they attack a problem, a business problem. And we happened to get moving to the hydrogen economy. So we had 80 MBA students working on this problem, and a lot of great research went into it. And it was also a $1,000 prize for each winning team. And, you know, so 8 MBA students get pretty motivated by that. And at the end of it, I took it, the information with another student, and we developed it into a report that we sent to the Department of Energy and the Council on Environmental Quality. And then I kept going, and eventually I realized that, you know, I thought I knew pretty much about energy, and I realized from this how much I didn't know. And so I really wrote the book from the perspective of what does the average citizen need to know about all aspects of energy to understand and, you know, make sensible decisions about it.
Now, Susan, we've done a few podcasts recently about problems with today's transmission system. Can you tell me about energy storage and the kinds of problems it solves with transmission?
Well, some of the new forms of energy, they have a challenge in that, like, you know, wind and solar, they have a challenge in that they vary, the supply varies at different points in time. And when you provide electricity, you have to have the demand and the supply matching at any instantaneous point in time. So the fact that the demand, you know, and the supply aren't necessarily always matching, then storage becomes a pretty important part of the equation. So, you know, there's a combination of, you know, getting the electricity and then storing it and then distributing it. Those three things have to happen, really, to get the electricity from where it's access to where it's needed. So storage becomes really important. And if you look at comparing it to something like, coal, for instance, you know, that coal is this physical thing that you can store and then, you know, burn it when you need it. So there's lots of different kinds of energy storage. There's storage underground, you know, geothermal is one that's being looked at quite nicely with, for instance, solar heat, you know, is a great combination with geothermal because it can be stored underground. Heat can be, and it's a real logical thing. To, you know, basically batteries. I mean, everybody knows what a battery is, and they're used on a small scale. They're used on a big scale, and so you can take, you know, solar or wind and put it into little tiny batteries I've seen even, you know. So there's quite a range of storage, but that's necessary to be able to provide the energy when it's needed.
Now, do the batteries use up more energy than it would to just not store? It just occurred to me that maybe the batteries are using up a bunch of energy too.
Well, it definitely will take some energy to make the batteries, but when they store, there's different kinds. I should mention that there's things other than batteries, and there's a couple of different things. There's batteries, there's also hydrogen fuel cells, and there's also capacitor, ultracapacitors that all are very good solutions from they kind of all seem very similar from a physical standpoint. They look kind of the same, or they seem kind of the same. But there's also other ones which are hydropower. There's like I said already, the geothermal. And there's also something that, again, uses the earth, is the compressed air energy storage.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these are all, you know, the three that use, like, the earth, I guess you'd say. I mean, you have to have the physical characteristics of the earth to be there to be able to use them. So pumped hydro is, you know, like if you have a big lake or a big any body of water, that you can take the hydrogen and pump it and, you know, go up and down. Basically what happens there is it does take energy, definitely takes energy to pump the water up in the air, and then when you need it to let the force of the water be the source of electricity. It does take energy, but what happens is it takes energy on off-peak times, and it supplies it on peak times. So, again, back to the thing about matching demand and supply, you know, that's as important. So back to what you said about batteries. Do batteries take energy? Yes, they take energy to be made, and it takes energy, you know, to replace them. But just to charge them and let them dissipate, no, it doesn't take energy. I mean, you're using the energy, for instance, from the wind or from the sun. It's coming in. That is energy, so it's coming into the battery. The battery is stored, stores the energy, and then it's used when it's needed. So
now, what
I mean,
do we
that's
see?
The use of the energy.
Let's talk about renewable energy. Let's focus a little bit. Mm-hmm. What are we seeing used most often? You mentioned the geothermal and the batteries.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a feel for
air. I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Compressed air energy storage, that's one that compressed air is stored underground in, like, mines, you know, can be in caverns and mines, and that's used quite a bit for utilities, as well as the pumped hydro is used quite a bit for utilities, as well as geothermal. And geothermal can also be used just like around our houses. So geothermal is basically the earth stays at a consistent temperature,
mm-hmm.
you know, throughout the year, whereas the temperature on top of the earth changes. So during the winter time, when the earth is, you know, pretty much is definitely warmer than it is in the cold climate, and during the summertime, the earth is definitely cooler than the hot climate, then you can use that, you know, the earth itself to store whatever it is, the cooler temperature or the warmer temperature, and so we can even use that for homes. So if you combine some of these things together, it works really well.
Can you give me an example?
Like I say, pardon me?
Can you give me an example? When you say
sure,
combine
sure,
them?
Yeah. If you take, again, back to the solar thermal, you can take the heat of the sun, and then you've got two things with the solar, of course. You've got the light and you've got the heat, and we use both of them, you know, for photovoltaics and for solar thermal. But the solar thermal is a logical combination with the geothermal because it's just heat, you know, and then being stored as heat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing.
Right.
So what we need to do is look at combining some things. And really when I think of the utility companies as they're buying energy, one challenge, and I think it's in Hawaii, they're getting to a point where they've got 20% wind, and they're starting to have problems with the variability of their grid because of the variability of wind. And so as wind and solar providers to work with storage companies, I think that's something that would be very worthwhile to them because the utility companies are looking at it as, and I will say this, that I introduced an energy storage company to the public utility commissioner in Texas, and then he proceeded to introduce them to the ERCOT, which is the ones that run the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the problems is just who's going to pay for the storage. I mean, they don't. So when you're looking at the cost of wind versus the cost of like coal, it's also what do we do about storage? And I think that's something that's not always really kept in mind. But having some, you know, there's all kinds of different things. Like out in the rural areas, you could have some of these big storage systems. Like I say, there's the ones that use, you know, batteries, fuel cells, and ultracapacitors, or some combination of those. The ultracapacitors and the batteries. Those are really great to use out in a rural area where they might not need to transport it so much. They can, you know, store it and use it right there. Or have companies buy the storage units because they want to be able to manage their off-peak times, or there's all kinds of different ways. If you start looking at storage as part of the package, besides just the wind or the solar, you have a more complete package, and I think it's more palatable to the utility companies.
Now, do you have any feel for how much it increases the cost?
Well, that's a good question. I should have done that before. That's a good question. I don't know offhand, or I have some information, but I didn't look it up just before this. But I can't answer the question. I mean, I just might as well say that I can't answer the question because I don't have the information at my fingertips. But definitely, it would add some cost.
Right. And the question is, how does it compare? I mean, obviously, I think it's called, is it called firming out the load is going to cost something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Making sure that the load is a firm load is going to cost something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's either,
that's right.
It's either this or, in the case of wind, combining it with hydro. And I suspect it's just best to have as many options as possible.
That's right. Yeah, and it makes it more palatable. And it's really important that we look at a complete package. You know, if we just, with some of the policies that are being put in place, if they say, okay, we're just going to focus on wind and solar, it's like, okay, also focus wind, solar, and storage to make sure we've really done the job here and we don't go, okay, great, we've got wind and solar, and now we don't have any storage.
Right. That makes a lot of sense, actually. I know that here in the Northwest, there's a ton of wind coming online, and one thing that the planners are looking at is taking wind from different parts of the country different parts of the region so that it all doesn't come in at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning different regions are going to have wind, are going to be windier at different times of day.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's another way of addressing
yes.
the problem.
Yeah, and that's, to take that a step further, in my book I also talk about, a global energy grid. I've really looked at all aspects, green living, green building, renewable energy, storage, grids, the economy, I mean, everything, and also world relationships. And if you think about it, I used to live in Australia a while back, and it's about halfway around the world, It takes so when it's nighttime here, it's daytime there and vice versa. And there is the technology to have grids connecting the whole world. And I've got a map, and it's actually from Buckminster Fuller, the inventor and futurist, a map that he put together called the Dumaxian Map. And it shows how the world can be connected by high-voltage power lines, and we could be much more efficient with our energy if we sent the energy that, we get on off-peak times and sent it over there and vice versa.
Now, that's interesting. I think I talked to someone else about that idea before. So making the grids all connect,
mm-hmm.
all the transmission
lines. So you've got to put in some,
internationally.
Yes.
And managing them internationally so you can take advantage of different people's peaks and off peaks.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And in some countries, we're such a big country that, we do it across states, but there are countries that have connected up in different parts of the world. And, yes, we could do it, though. I mean, the easy one is, there's been a lot said recently about Alaska being close to Russia. Well, that's true. It's only 3 miles, the shortest distance. How does that work? There is the 3 miles is the shortest distance between landmass to landmass to get from Alaska to Russia. So to be able to build power lines across that is very simple.
Right. Well, these are all great ideas, Susan, and we should have you back to talk about other parts of your book.
Sure.
It sounds like we've touched on one tiny subject so far. But thank
mm-hmm.
you so much for joining us.
Well, sure. Thank you very much.
Be sure to pick up our free Energy Efficiency Markets newsletter at realenergywriters.com.